Check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
And welcome to Listen to Their Screams. This is a special bonus episode where we are being joined by the writer and director of Frogman, Anthony Cousins, which, by the way, Frogman now available on Screambox. But Anthony, how are you?
Doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm on here talking to you, talking horror movie. That's always a good thing, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's my happy place.
Yeah, me too. But so let's dive right into it. I noticed on your Instagram profile, it says that you are a quote-unquote frog enthusiast and a horror fanatic. So tell us, how did those two things combine and the ideal of Frogman is developed?
Well, it was never my intention to combine the two. They were separate entities of my interest. And then Frogman came to my attention. That was in like 2018. And it was just a magical storm of frogs, monsters, cryptids. Cryptids naturally lead into found footage for me. I think the two go hand in hand, and a burning desire to make a feature finally after so many years of false starts. And this seemed like one that we could do, you know, on our own for whatever budget we could come up with. So that's how we ended up with Frogman, I guess.
That's fantastic.
I have to tell you before we move on, though, Ike knows this. I hate frogs. Oh gosh, they gross me out. Now see, that's the thing though. I hate frogs and I hate turtles, but I like things like Frogman and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I like, I don't know.
I can relate. I love, you know, I love Arachnophobia and I like the new movie Infested. Fucking hate spiders with a passion. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. No judgment, but like, well, maybe a little bit on the turtles.
I had a bad experience as a kid with a snapping turtle that kind of freaked me out a little bit. And ever since then, I don't know.
Ooh, okay. Those ones are nasty. I'll give you that.
Yeah. So it's just now I think they're just sketchy little things that hide in their shell and it just bugs me.
Yeah. Just for the record, I love turtles. We have a turtle. I live in Florida. So we have like a turtle that literally it came with the property. It just walks around, you know, when the rain, it comes out and I always take pictures of it. So I love
that's
turtles,
adorable.
Just for the record.
All right. 2 points for you.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. I kid. But no, other than his hatred for, you know, amphibians and whatnot, I do share your interest with cryptids and folklore and legends and things of that nature. I'm a huge, you know, I love Bigfoot, you know, all the weird cryptids, the fae, fairies, all that weird stuff. So have you always had an interest in the folklore? Has this always been something that, you know, you've kind of had? Or is this something that developed with the creation of Frogman?
I mean, I've always had I thought a fairly big fascination with cryptids and real monsters. Oh, I'll stand by that. Although I didn't realize how how deep it went. You know, like once you get past the A-listers, there's this B-list and C-list team that Frogman, unfortunately, as of right now, is a part of. I think you should be an A-lister, but. Yeah, it's a rabbit hole. You know, you think you got a grasp on it if you know about Bigfoot and Mothman and Jersey Devil, but that's just, you're barely scratching the surface. There is just so many monsters, supposed monsters in the U.S. And yeah, I love that that's kind of like our version of, you know, like fae, like you said, and like fairy tale, like fantasy creatures, you know, like every country has them. It's just like they're so much older that like we're aware of them in kind of a different respect or context, whereas like, you know, Frogman was first sighted in 1955. So it's just like you're seeing like mythology and legends like be born in our lifetime.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I personally I like the whole like not conspiracy theories, but the people who like come up with these like, oh, I saw Mothman or I saw Frogman. I think it's super unique, super interesting. So, and by just for the record, I believe in Bigfoot. I'm just throwing that out there for everyone. I believe in that
Same.
shit. Yeah, all right. Well, hey Anthony, you wrote the movie with John Karskos. Is how you say his name? I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So tell us about your partnership with John and what's your guys' process like for writing?
So we went to film school together now like tw 12 years ago or more. I can't believe how old I am. It's so crazy. But yeah, he's a director in his own right also. But a really talented screenwriter. And yeah, when I started making my own stuff and I needed some assistance from a pro, yeah, we started writing together. So we wrote like a short together called The Bloody Ballad of Squirt Reynolds, which kind of got us the job of doing a segment for the Scare Package, the first Scare Package movie. So we naturally wrote that together, and then Scare Package 2, and then Frogman. And it's like now here we are. But our process, I mean, we're friends first and foremost. So we hang out a lot and spitball ideas and come up with weird shit. And yeah, when one of those things like Frogman like gets to a point of like, you know what, I think there's something here, maybe we should like take this a little more seriously than just like, bullshitting when we're hanging out. Then we kind of meet up with intention and break story together. So we're just like, okay, like we're like, how's this happen? And we don't try to follow like a beat sheet or like, structure. We're not thinking like, we're just like telling, like basically like telling a story back and forth together until all of a sudden we're at the finish line. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that might be how it ends. And then he goes off for a couple weeks, or a month or, more, and writes the thing. And we have kind of check-ins here and there to make sure he's not like getting to page 90 and has gone like way off track. So, we have like little check-ins, and then once it's finished, we kind of like bounce it back and forth and, polish it up together. So yeah, and then like Frogman 2, which we're like nearing the end of the writing process on that one. That's been the quickest we've ever turned something out. There's usually not like a ticking clock of like, oh, we got to write this thing because we got to be shooting by this time. It's like on our schedule, but this one, people are expecting it sooner than later. So, it's been really nice having a deadline, I gotta say.
I don't think many people would say, man, it's nice to
It
have
really,
a
I mean, when you're a professional procrastinator, it really is. It lights a fire under your ass that really helps kick things. And I told him, I was like, look, we gotta like remember this process, because here we are just basically a month later from finishing the outline. We have a finished script that now we're polishing up. We can do this in a month. There's no reason this has to take so long like it usually does.
I love that. Yeah, I love the professional procrastinator. I level with you there. I'm bad about that, but that's awesome. Well, and we will talk a little bit more about Frogman 2 here in a minute. But to kind of touch on something with Frogman that Dave and I we talked a little bit about during our review of the film, which we loved it, of course. But we love how you touch on like how these urban legends, these like creatures, they kind of like form into this weird like capitalistic nightmare of where they commercialize the hell out of it, right? Like, oh yeah, we have Mothman t-shirts or the Bigfoot Ate My Ass t-shirt, so you touch on that where there are a lot of cases where towns are like selling the story for profit. Was that just like a little thing that you just dropped in there, or was that something important you utilized in the film?
I mean, I think it was kind of a melding of two things. One being like that's just how some towns are, like Roswell and Point Pleasant with Mothman, and what is it, like somewhere around Willow Creek. I don't know if it's called Willow Creek, but wherever like the big Bigfoot town is. And I think that's really fascinating and funny and entertaining that like these little towns like don't have a whole lot of identity. And so like when something like this happens, they just latch onto it and they're like, yeah, this is what we're all about. And Loveland is not like that. I finally visited there, and there's this incredible Frogman Festival that's being put on independently outside of the city. But the city itself, really, there's not a whole lot of Frogman stuff to be found as of now, unfortunately. So it's kind of a mixture of like wanting to play with that real world thing that happens that's like just kind of fascinating. And also, I'm a huge fan of The Shadow over Innsmouth, the H.P. Lovecraft story. And I wanted to work that into this, and so it was kind of fun to think like, well, if some or most of the people in this town are children of Frogman, you know, and it, are the pro like, you know, descendants of this weird crossbreeding that he's been doing for whatever reason, that maybe we better figure out in the sequel. It was just kind of a really fun idea that like the town would just like be hiding in plain sight in that way, where it's like they're doing this thing that they would not want anybody to know about publicly, and like this creature really exists, but like they're just hiding it under this facade of like Frogman as the urban legend. I don't know, I just thought that was like a fun modern take for in to go an Innsmouth route with a cryptid.
Yeah,
That makes perfect sense.
you mentioned earlier about how it naturally led to found footage. I mean, was there ever a thought of trying to do anything else, or did you just say, "Ah, this is what it's got to be to tell this story"?
This one was found footage from the get-go. I think for multiple reasons, for like we immediately knew we wanted to write it for our friend Nate to star in. And he is on Instagram constantly, like filming himself for his Instagram stories, just being a weirdo, running around the woods, doing all sorts of weird stuff. So we like took that real world inspiration of like, I think he would thrive in the found footage medium. He's kind of doing that on his own already. And then also, just like I said, I think cryptids and found footage just kind of go well together. Like the Patterson-Gimlin footage, pretty much any footage or photos we have of cryptids feels like found footage to me. You know, I feel like when we're making a found footage movie, that's what we're like striving to make it feel like. It's like you're watching, like, oh, is that real? Like, did I really just see a creature walk by? You know?
No, and honestly, I kind of felt that because that first like image of Frogman, which is on like purportedly this like shitty 90s like tape recorder, and it's just like it's weird because it's like that's how it is in real life, right? Some asshole with a potato got a picture of Bigfoot, and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's it. There he is, so I love that. But you've obviously done a lot of horror shorts. You even mentioned your segment and Scare Package, which Dave and I love the Scare Package movies. I just they're super unique. But is this your first attempt at a full-length film? And if it is, how is the transition from going to like the short film to the feature length? What was that transition like?
Yeah, this is my first attempt. It was, yeah, I have quite a few feature ideas and some that I've been trying to get off the ground for years now. That just, you know, I keep hitting walls, and so, you know, Frogman was something I knew would just be considerably more affordable to make. And you know, it's kind of anyone who's, you know, in the film industry that doesn't have an incredible amount of money at their disposal or a family, you know, like connection to the business knows like there's this catch 22 where you want to make a feature, but you can't make a feature. No one will let you make a feature or believe that you can make a feature until you've made a feature. And so you really just like unless like lightning strikes and you get a really great opportunity somehow, you just kind of have to make the first one yourself, like however you can get it out. And so that's what this was for us. But you know, we wrote this genuinely wanting to make it, not with like, let's just shit something out to break the seal into feature world, you know, like this was something we really wanted to tell. And yeah, the transition, the one thing I always worried about is like with shorts, I've never shot a short that went over 4 days. So like keeping knowing what it is, like knowing the tonal consistency, you know, and all that, like is really easy in a 4 day span. Most shorts take place, you know, over the course of like a day or two, chronologically. So it's like really easy to just like keep that consistency. And I was like, I don't know how you do it when you're making a feature, like you're gonna shoot stuff in the third act, in week one, just because you have to schedule by for all sorts of different reasons and like logistics of like people's availability and locations and stuff like that. And I'm like, what if you shoot something in week one that's for act three, and then you get to act three and you're like, well, this has evolved since then, like naturally on set, like we've, the characters have gone different directions or we've come up with better ideas, like and that happened. And I think even more so than it probably usually does. I mean, even on the studio level, there's reshoots and, pickups and stuff like that. But for us, trying to be so loose with this and like do this improvisational approach with Frogman, like it really was able to evolve into something like more than what we wrote. And so there's things, especially in the third act, that we shot three times over. Because things just kept changing and what we were shooting wasn't working. And but thankfully making a movie like this, you don't have to like rebuild a set or like pay for a location and get 30 people back together. It's like, me and the actors and a sound guy and John's there. And so it's like super chill to like reshoot those things. There's scenes that take place in the tent, or actually I don't think any scenes from the tent made it into the movie, but there are scenes that were supposed to be in the tent. We just set this tent up in my parents' garage, so just got to get tricky with it.
Yeah. Well, as Ike knows, and anybody that listens to our show, I've been very critical of found footage films. They're not my favorite. Now, there are lots of them more recently that I think have had original approaches, unique approaches that have really kind of started to win me over, and yours included. The one thing that I've always been critical of that I think you hit 100% is, in general, a lot of found footage films, they don't there's not a lot of character development, right? Somehow, I don't know what it is about that format. Sometimes they miss out on making you invested in the characters, but you didn't, right? I mean, literally almost from the jump, you felt for this guy who knew what he saw, was trying to prove it, was getting made fun of. His friends were coming along just to hang out with him and have a good time, not taking it as serious. I mean, you were invested in him and what he was doing. Do you find, I know you don't have a lot of experience with features and everything else, but did you find that being challenging to figure out how to do character development in a found footage format?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, that was truly like the number one goal of ours when we set out to do this, because I'm a huge found footage fan. I love the big stuff, the small stuff, the in between. But even some of my favorite found footage movies, I couldn't tell you who the characters were in them. They're very, very plot driven. And there's a lot of just like chaos and just like people swearing all over the place. And so, I mean, one thing is we wrote these three lead roles for the people that play them. Like they're people that we know in real life. And so we wrote them for them. So I think that really helped. But yeah, also we really set out to like, let's make characters that you care about, like in any other movie that you watch, characters are like king, like you got to connect with the characters to be into the movie. And found footage is this weird genre that just kind of gets away with like not giving that the attention it usually needs. And so it works a lot of times, but that's something we really wanted to try, as a huge found footage fan. And like pretty much everything I've done, like everything I've done so far has kind of been a weird new genre, and it's not like intentionally like I got to try something new, I got to try something new. It's just like all I do is watch horror movies. I've seen everything, and so I know even when visiting a world that's been well covered, like what I want to try differently that I think it's maybe lacking a little bit. So I'm glad it worked. And going into the sequel, that's another thing that's like really, really important to us. And I think something that's really unique is like there's a lot of found footage sequels. There's not a whole lot of found footage sequels where characters return from the first movie, because usually they're all dead. So that's really fun to play with too, is like how they're going to evolve also.
Yeah, I think that was one of the strongest parts of your film was, obviously, right? It built, you wanted to see Frogman, right? You wanted that payoff of where it got to that point. But not only because of Frogman, But at least me as a viewer, I wanted it for him, right? I'm like, ah, oh, come on, I want his vindication, right? I want him to say, aha, see? And that's so you're rooting for him. And like you said, a lot of times you're just rooting for the character. I mean the cryptid, or you're just hoping for that. Not so much the character, the characters are replaceable. But it's like I felt a relief for him when it was like he was supported, right? He knew, oh, here it is. And so yeah, it was I thought it was a great job, right? I really was invested in the character. And obviously, right, he had this thing for the girl, right? He was kind of pining for her and she wouldn't return. So you felt that too. I mean, there was just a lot of I think there's a lot on your part and the actors, a lot of great character development.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're some of the best that Minnesota has to offer. That's where we shot. That's where we're all from. And there's also a lot of like personal like connection to these characters and what they're going through also. They all went to film school together and they're all like in their 30s now and not really making it, like they're not doing what they went to school for 10 years later. And that's like, we wrote this when I was 30 and I wasn't as down on my luck as Dallas is, but I was definitely at a point where I was like, I thought I would have made a feature by now. I thought I would at least feel confident that this is going to be the career that I'm with the rest of my life. And, most people that haven't made it to the point of having a steady paycheck in the film business. No, like you kind of wake up most mornings with dread and anxiety and like, oh, what the hell have I done? Thought, of like, is there anything else I'm qualified to do? Like, because this is just scary. So there's a lot of us in Dallas. And then, Scotty behind the camera too. That was a big thing we really wanted to focus on too, is like, he's going to be behind the camera 90% of the movie. But let's get him in front of the camera enough that you remember who is behind the camera and that he is like not just, someone observing and, documenting this movie, but like active in it,
No, and that was actually, I was going to add to that too, is that a lot of times when there are like cameramen or like a dedicated camera person within a found footage, film, they explicitly lose that character development. Like, I like the movie, but the movie As Above, So Below, there are definitely, red coat characters, Star Trek reference, where they're meant to die. They're explicitly in that movie to die. But in this film, you feel for him, especially, in his last moments, or his last moments on film. So yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. But you mentioned that you filmed, you said, in Minnesota, is that right? I don't know if you want to say specifically where you filmed, but where what area did you film in, and then how long did it take you to film and then edit the movie?
It was like in and around Minneapolis. That's where we all live. Stillwater is this quaint little riverside town that we that is our Loveland, and had a lot of our locations too. We shot for 10 days initially. I think it was like five on, and then we took a day or two off, and then another five. And then by the end of that, we had gotten into shooting the third act, shot a decent amount of the third act and realized it wasn't working as it was written. And so we took, I think, like 2 weeks off, rewrote the third act, came back together and shot for another 5 days, I think. And then over the course of about a year and a half, 2 years, we shot pickups here and there. And you let a movie linger in production that long, you're going to end up coming up with more ideas. So they're like, we just like slowly kept adding things to these, okay, we're going to meet up to shoot this bit that we hadn't shot yet. And also we came up with 3 pages of new stuff too. So it was a long process and that, it was kind of fun and unique, but definitely trying to just shoot this next one in just one go and learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, so there in Minnesota, do you have local folk tales, folklores, creatures, any of that there in Minnesota?
I mean, anywhere there's woods, there's Bigfoot. So
Pretty
like,
much.
you'll see Bigfoot stuff if you go far enough north. What else? I guess there's like the Minnesota Iceman or something like that, which is like, I guess, considered a cryptid. It's like kind of a missing link guy. Who I don't think he was even found here. He was just like on ice here for a really long time, and now he's in Austin, I think, in a museum. That's what I found when I looked up cryptids. Wendigos, you'll hear about. I mean, there's lots of like indigenous folklore, really fascinating stuff. But yeah, I think that's about it for cryptids.
Well, you talked about, where you filmed it there in Minnesota, right? It was a long process, everything else. When it finally, everything's done, completed in the can, how did you premiere the film, right? Did you get on any festivals, or how did you get it out there to the public for the first time?
So we submitted to some festivals, which was also a nice, like, because no one was waiting on this movie, but our producing partners running press were like, okay, you got to finish this movie eventually. Last fall 2023, we submitted to some festivals and we got in to a few, the first one being Popcorn Frights in Miami, and it was like, oh shit, now we really have a deadline. Like, people are going to have to watch this movie. So like, it was like a mad scramble of like the 3 weeks leading up to Popcorn Frights, like finishing things up. Sound wasn't done yet. And so we premiered there, and actually we premiered in like, it was not really finished. The sound was probably 80% there. I don't think we had the mid-credit sequence yet at that point. No, we definitely didn't. So yeah, but we premiered there, and that was a very scary moment for me, because I was, 3.5 years with the movie, you don't really know what you've done. You kind of lose, like, you made this thing because you thought there was a good movie there that you would want to watch as a fan. But 3.5 years later, like, the magic's just completely gone and nothing about it surprises you anymore. So I was like very, very scared and super relieved when the reception from that screening was positive.
I was gonna ask, were you sitting there, were you like watching the crowd with bated breath to see what
Oh yeah, I was that was the most nervous I've maybe ever been in my life, was sitting in that screening. But it went well, thankfully. And then all the screenings after that have been great. Like, we played at HP Lovecraft Fest in Portland, which is, it's been really fun, because like that was a very different experience, because they really caught all the Lovecraftian references and ate that up. And then we played Telluride Horror Show in Colorado, which is just a super, super fun crowd. I mean, Telluride is not an easy place to get to. So, the fans that are sitting in the theater at the Telluride Horror Show are like rabid horror fans. So that was a blast.
That's fantastic. And not to mention, I love Colorado. Fun fact, I love just being there. I've been there only once, but I want to go back. So now that I know that there's a place for rabid horror fans, like, that's a destination now.
Oh dude, it's my favorite weekend of the year. Like, hands down, if I submit a movie and they reject me, I'll still show up. I don't care. Like, I love it so much. I'm actually in Denver right now.
Really, that's awesome. Well, at least it's not snowing. I know it's summertime, but you never know with Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, that little s triangle there, it'll just start snowing.
Oh, it's weird. It was like 50 degrees this morning. I was like, what's happening?
Oh man, you're lucky. I think it's right now. I'm in Florida. We're at low 90s, I
Oh God, very
think.
different, very much more wet than here.
Oh yeah, it's very moist down here. I know some people don't like the word moist, so that's why I like to say it, I guess. I kid. But all right, other than talking about moist weather, the movie, of course, is on Screambox. We kind of mentioned that at the top. It released as of June 7th, I believe. And you talked about getting your film in festivals and whatnot, which I would assume is a little bit of a different process than getting the film like on a streaming service. What was the process of getting on a Screambox? What was that like?
I wasn't like a big part of that process, because Rotting Press, my producing partners, kind of handled like those kind of things. I mean, that's the beauty of film festivals, is they, at least initially, they reached out to us because of the buzz we were having, just to see it. So we sent them a screener, and here we are now. I don't know what happened between seeing the screener and like when I got brought back in, and they were like, it's going to be on Screenbox. But everything since then has been, they've been so supportive. Like, I can't believe how much Frogman stuff they've been posting and, you know,
Yeah.
sending out t-shirts to people and, you know, communicating with me and, you know, like setting up interviews and stuff. They've been so awesome to work with.
Yeah, and we talked to Sean Robinson a few weeks ago. He did the movie Life of Bill. And for a long time on Screenbox, right, it was, if you looked at their top 10 most played, it was Terrifier, 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 you know, just constantly. And we love the Terrifier movies. No. But then all of a sudden, like Sean knocked it off, right? Life of Bill hit number one. He's like, oh, he was kind of flipping out. He's like, what the hell is this? If you look now, number one's Frogman. What? I mean, you know, you spent so long on this, right? You were trying to make a feature. You put everything into it. What's it like, man? You're getting this great fan reception, right? They're obviously, if it's number one, they're obviously watching the film. What's it like for you to get these receptions at the film festivals, on Screenbox, online? Knowing, man, you put your heart and soul into this, thinking, God, I need to get, you know, it's like, why is this not clicking? And then all of a sudden, at least something hits. What's that like for you as a filmmaker?
It's really, really surreal for one thing. I'd say it's surreal more than anything. I mean, I don't think I'm necessarily like exceptional in any specific part of the filmmaking process. And like the only thing that has kind of kept me going, and the only thing I can see that's consistent over all my projects, and everything has had relative success. I haven't like had anything that anyone like, you know, that was like a total dud and didn't get in the end into any festivals or anything. It's just that I'm making genuinely what I want to see, and what's interesting to me at the time. I'm never like, okay, vampires are hot, let's do a vampire thing. It's just like, well, you know, what do I think would be fun to make next? And every single project I've made, including Frogman, you get to a point where you wonder if it was a big mistake. And, you know, like, okay, this seemed interesting at the time, but is there really something there? Like, or is anyone going to care? Obviously, no one was asking for a Frogman movie. So it's really, really gratifying. And it, you know, it gives me a little bit of confidence going into whatever is next that, like, okay, if I just keep making the things that I want to see, someone else out there will want to see it, you know. And I think if I have any like superpower when it comes to filmmaking, not like, it's not even really, it's just that I've seen a lot. I watch a lot of movies. I love this genre to death, and I know what I haven't seen, and I know what I think would be cool to see as a fan, you know. And then the irony is that I make that thing and I can't enjoy it at all. But
Well,
it's still, it gets me going.
yeah, well, you had the foresight. I mean, no one may have been asking for the Frogman film, but now that we've seen it, it's like, oh, this is the film we needed, right? We needed this film. So, but playing along with that though, right? You said it's, you know, it's invigorating, right? But does it help your creative process to see this feedback, to just get you just juiced up to, hey, let's jump in, I'm ready to go with another project now, that finally, vindication's a weird word. With the speaking with the creative process, but does it give you a little bit of that vindication and rejuvenate your creative process and get your juices kind of flowing to get hopping to get on work?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's not, there's kind of a like a dark side to it too, where like the success of Frogman, you know, has led us to this incredible opportunity to make a sequel, which is super awesome. And obviously we feel confident going into the sequel that people want to see it. So that's cool. I've never been able to make a movie and been like guaranteed, like, hey, people are gonna want to see this. But the flip side of that is like, you know, how do we not fuck this up now? Like, because we have to satisfy the people that want to see Frogman. There's like, there's, you know, there's expectations now. And so we've talked a lot about that, of like, what did people like about the first Frogman? What didn't they like? And what where we've landed again is like, let's just make the sequel we would want to see. That's like, that's the best thing we could possibly do. I think that's where we would make the best possible movie, even if it's not the movie that everyone wants. That's the best version of the sequel that we could ever give you is by making the one that we would want to see. So that's what we're gonna try to do, but
Makes
yeah.
sense.
Fair enough. And I promise I'm not going to ask you any more questions about your juices, but
I realize I used that word quite a few times there, didn't I?
you said juices like five times.
Best,
I was
talking about my
uncomfortable.
juices. I was trying to come up with another word, but I was like, we're just gonna stick with this.
I was waiting for the juices loose comment or something. I don't know, but
Ooh.
I kid, I kid.
Beetlejuice
Anywho,
has that covered.
that's
We don't
right.
need
I
to
was
go
going to
there.
say, it's in that trailer.
That's a new movie. That's a different movie.
That's right. But to kind of keep it on the same, concept, or I should say the same track here, that Frogman 2 is happening, right? You talk a lot about the creative process, and you've already mentioned to us that, hey, the script's written, we're getting ready to, dive in. Can you tell us anything about the timeline for filming and release? When can we get our next dose of the Frogman,
We're aiming to release, I think the earliest realistically we could make a good movie and release it would be fall 2025. That's my goal, fall 2025. We'll see how things go. There's always bumps in the road. I think at the very latest it'd probably be sometime in early 2026, but 2025 is our goal, and I think with where we're at right now it's very doable.
Is the
Yeah.
plan
Oh, it...
to, oops, sorry. I was gonna say, is the plan another found footage film?
that's the plan. Yeah, we kind of, when we started writing, we agreed right away, if at any point we feel like we're forcing the in-world camera thing, let's drop it, because like let's just make the best movie possible, even if that means it's not found footage. But as of right now, it is all in world camera, and I think it's gonna work.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Didn't
And
mean to cut you off there. Like, what were you gonna ask?
oh no, I was just gonna say, you were talking about how, it's gonna be fall, 2025. Dave and I are huge proponents of, we'd rather wait a long time for a good product than that immediate gratification of like a subpar product. He's mentioned it, but we're huge fans of the Terrifier franchise. And so, we've always said, like, hey, like, even when it got pushed back, and then they moved it forward a little bit or whatever, we're always like, we'd rather wait, and so I always like to mention that, because there are a lot of fans within the horror community that are very, I think pushy would probably be the best word. They're like, get that shit to us as quick as possible, and it's just like, it's not how it works.
I think they preferred probably to be called passionate, right? I mean,
I mean, there's not, horror is a unique genre where we've kind of, a lot of fans have been conditioned to expect, like you can get a sequel out next year. We had a Friday the 13th movie every year
Every
for how
year.
many years in a row? Saw, like yeah, there's a lot of, of course, when you have like a massive success like that and you have like studio backing, they'll throw money at you to get something going immediately, and you can spit it out a year later, but that's not always realistic. We've seen that, that's not always the right move too. As you said, like, it's worth waiting for a better product. And I mean, even some of those bigger franchises have stopped doing it yearly, I think Saw X was a huge success, and they immediately announced like, well, we're gonna do a follow-up, it'll be out next year, and then they pushed a year. And yeah, sad. I want a Saw movie every year, but also like I would rather wait. There's a reason they pushed, and those ones that like get spat out every year, they're more formulaic too. And that's the last thing we want to do is give you a carbon copy of the first Frogman movie. Like, if we're gonna bring these characters back, if we're gonna make it in-world camera again, it's gotta be a very different movie. Like, there's no reason these characters would go back in the woods with a high-A camera. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So we had to come up with a whole new, trajectory for them, and like kicking off point as to why there would even be a follow-up.
Well, before I moves on to the next question, we start to wrap. I guess I would be remiss, if the internet would hate me, if I didn't ask, at least give us a little insight and talk to us a little bit about Frogman Fucks. And you, what cracks me up is you mentioned Screambox earlier, Pluggy. Screambox themselves were using the hashtag Frogman Fucks, which would just it just cracked me up. Where tell I mean how where does that come from? What that was a great scene. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I gotta say, we really did not expect that to take off like it did. There was that was not, yeah, it wasn't like that scene got over and we're like, this is it, this is this movie's identity, this is what everyone's gonna latch on to. We thought it was funny. But yeah, we John wrote that line in because we knew, during the town people interviews, we wanted to allude to the cult and that there's maybe some crossbreeding of, species and stuff. And so he came up with that line, and then we had our buddy Pete deliver it, who's like the town hillbilly.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, he's awesome. So he's a really great writer in his own right, and he also works in the production or like the art side of filmmaking, production design and stuff. So yeah, he just showed up and we said, yeah, you're gonna be the one that reveals that, Frogman fucks. And then they just like spitballed a little
Oh, it's funny because it's like, I saw fans, stuff used up. Oh, that makes sense, right? Of course, fans are gonna latch on to something. Then I saw Screambox using it, and I was like, oh, this is something here. And I thought,
bit.
when the world's ready for some Frogman Fuck shirts. I mean, we need something here.
Oh yeah, I think there might be Frogman Fuck shirts on
Oh,
RyanCrest.com.
okay. Well,
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I know where I'm going when we get off here.
That's been another thing where it's like, oh God, do we have to follow up Frogman Fuck somehow? And it's like if we try, we will fail. It'll be like an eye-rolly, cringy moment. Like those kind of things have to just present themselves naturally. You can't try
Absolutely.
for it.
No, yeah.
Frogman fucks. That's yeah. Well, I had to explain it to Dave because he didn't quite understand like the sort of like the cultural like what does it mean to like what does that mean? So I had to explain to him it's like a lingo thing, I guess, that people say.
Was still funny, but I don't, I'm not hip. I don't.
He's not hip with the times, man. Gotta get with the times.
I'm too old.
Anywho, we talked a lot about Frogman. Obviously, that's sort of like the main production here. But you are a man of many works. So, do you have any other projects in the works or anything else that you want to mention or plug for our fans?
Yeah, I mean, Frogman 2 is definitely a priority right now. Shooting a short film in a couple of weeks here that will hopefully we'll have ready by this fall festival season. So that'll be very different, not found footage, kind of again like some a tone that I've never tried before. And yeah, I've got a couple non-found footage, non-Frogman universe features that I'm trying really hard to get off the ground, because yeah, I'd like to do something else. I'd like to keep doing Frogman stuff, but maybe in between do other things.
Do you ever see yourself venturing outside the horror genre?
Yeah, I mean, definitely I love sci-fi and fantasy. I would jump at the opportunity to do either of those. Obviously, those are very costly endeavors. To do a good sci-fi or good found or fantasy movie, you kind of need a lot of money unless you have like a really clever, high concept idea like primers or something like that, that you can do for no money. But yeah, I would, but honestly, I'm fine sticking in horror till the end of time too, because you can do anything. You can do horror comedy, you can do horror romance, body horror, drama, you can do anything, and pretty much anything I want to do has some sort of disturbing, scary moment or a creature at some point anyway. So
Well, and like I can I've always said, man, horror, no matter what else comes and goes, it always seems like horror performs, right? I mean, the horror fans are always there, right? They're always wanting more. It's not like the flavor of the month with whatever the superhero or musical or I don't know, whatever. You mentioned the handsome vampires or whatever else. I mean, horror fans are for the most part, horror fans for life, right? And they're always looking for something else to watch. So
They're very loyal, yeah. And I mean, yeah,
they
there's
are.
just like there's all sorts of stuff that that goes into that. They're usually collectors. I'm a huge collector, of anything. Even when I like, okay, like streaming gives me everything I want. I can kind of tone down my physical media collection. Well, then I just become obsessed with tiki mugs all of a sudden, and now I'm collecting tiki mugs. I just like
Yeah.
it just j jumps to something else. But yeah, I think that goes into it too, where they're just like they're very loyal, and dedicated.
Absolutely. Well, we're gonna wrap this up here. The movie is Frogman, of course. That's excellent, man. Anthony, we loved it. It's highly recommended by us. We praised it during our review. Everybody go check it out if you haven't already. The movie is on Screambox, as we mentioned. Anthony, what's the best way that fans could follow you or the movie or whatever else to keep up with what you're working on? The development of Frogman 2. What's the best way for them to keep up on that?
Instagram's best, cousins underscore Anthony on Instagram, and then at Frogman Movie on Instagram also. Yeah.
All right. And for two, are you partnering with Rotting Press again? Are they? Yep. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Ike, anything else you want to close with or?
Actually, I do. I meant to ask on our last interview, and I feel like we should try and do this for future interviews. But as a creator, as a horror film, I want to leave with one last impression here. What is your favorite scary movie?
The Fly.
The Fly.
Oh. Yeah. The Cronenberg Fly. That's my favorite
Yeah.
movie of all time. Yeah,
That's solid.
absolutely.
I've
And
never seen The
that
Fly. I'm sorry.
yeah,
Dave loves that movie,
oh
though.
my gosh.
I've been bugging him for forever to watch that. He needs to watch
Bugging
that movie.
him.
Yeah.
He's
Yeah.
2 years, dude.
Yeah.
It's got
Yeah.
everything. It's got comedy. It's got romance. It's got drama. It's almost like operatic in a lot of ways. And like some of the greatest creature designs of all time. It's an
Dude,
incredible movie.
and some of the transformations will make your stomach turn. It's
Yeah.
so, especially for the time, it's like unreal what they did.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
Well, now that the Frogman director has compelled me to do so, I think I have to watch that movie now. So, a lot of pressure.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we'll be asking for your movie review in the near future on that one. So,
Yeah, I'll be checking
that's
in.
right. Well, Anthony, thank you for joining us. Like I said, we're big fans of the film. Can't wait for the second one. No pressure. Take your time. Like we said, we want a quality product, but we're looking forward to seeing what else you do. And man, I think we're expecting big things from you in the future, man. We think if you stick with your passion, just stick with what you know, it'll all work out. And I think, and I guess we can just, hey, everybody remember Frogman Fucks, right? I mean, that's
Thank you guys so much.
yeah, thank you.